Welcome to the 54 Problems Podcast, the global mini golf podcast. Hear from some of the best players in the sport. Look ahead to some of the biggest tournaments and have a chance to win some amazing prizes. And now your hosts, Andrew Edmonds and Simon Brown.
Hello and welcome to the 54 Problems Podcast. I'm your co-host, Andrew Edmonds. Welcome one and all, and thank you so much for joining us. And with me, as always, it's my good friend and co-host. You are never going to believe it. It's Simon Brown. Hello, Simon.
Hello. As always, it's good to be back.
Well, look, Simon, let's get straight into it, okay? Last episode, the first episode of the year, I asked you if you had any New Year's resolutions. You said that you were going to be more optimistic, if you remember that, all right? And then what happened immediately after that? You went to a tournament and you only went and won it. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. I have looked forward to the fact we have one less guest to invite on to the episode. And we can just self-indulge for a second. Although, okay. Let's be honest, it was still an invitational. But the field was good. And it's just, I think anybody that's been at the top of tournaments knows how much fun it is to compete in that last round and be at that cutting edge.
Sure.
It was a fantastic last 12 holes. It's a 12-hole course. Fantastic last 12 holes. And I went to a three-way playoff. I've lost playoffs before. Mm-hmm. Just to be in one and actually win it just feels fantastic.
Give the tournament name a shout out then. So where was this? What was the name of the tournament?
So this was the Gloucester Aces Ace of Spades Open. Just good part of it and good to not be shocking for once. So yeah.
All right, nice one. We will start the episode proper in a bit, then the January recap. Amazingly, for January, there's so much going on. Plenty of tournaments, plenty of news, plenty of things to talk about. We're going to have some incredible guests joining us later. So not just one guest, but multiple guests joining us to help us recap the month of January. So stay tuned for that. Just before we get into it, we've just got time for my favourite part of the episode, which is where we thank our Patreon supporters for their help in allowing us to record this podcast and to share this podcast. So thank you very much to the champion of the podcast, Sevi Kukielka. And if you, the listeners, would like to support this podcast yourself, you can do so by going to patreon.com/54problems. That's 5 and 4 with the numbers. And you can find that link on our Facebook page as well. Okay, so the January recap. In mini golf news, we now have a fairly good idea of what the interesting, important tournaments from the world of adventure golf will be around the world. We'll put a little picture guide up along with the episode so you can check it out and get a really quick look at what all the tournaments are going to be and start planning your 2023 calendar. So we have various city golf events throughout the year. Simon and myself are going to be going to Sundbyberg definitely. I'm also just planning at the moment, sorting out how I can get to Askim as well for my second city golf event. Simon might be looking at that as well. We have the FIAGM, the Finnish Adventure Golf Masters. That's on the 20th of May to the 21st of May. That's at Kuopio, which is an incredibly beautiful course, so one to look out for. Then in England, we have Putt 1K at the Aces Mini Golf Club in Gloucester. It's a really new, exciting tournament in England where you have the chance to win £1,000. It's positioning itself as possibly the most exciting, interesting tournament in England. So that would be definitely be one to look out for. Then we have the MAGM, the Moravia Adventure Golf Masters. That's between the 19th and 20th of August at Bowling Brno in Moravia in the Czech Republic. Then we have the SAGAM, the Swedish Adventure Golf Masters. We think that's going to be between the 2nd and the 3rd of September, almost definitely, but we don't know which course it's going to be at yet. So before you book your travel or anything, check with us for more details and we'll share them when we have them. Then we have the CAGAM, the Czech Adventure Golf Masters. That's between the 30th of September and the 1st of October at Adventure Golf Horní Bezdřichov, my local club, an absolutely fantastic course, or fantastic two courses. Then we have the Portuguese Open between the 18th and 19th of November at the Family Golf Park Vidamora. This one is really catching my interest this year, because last year in 2022, the weather was absolutely beautiful. The course looks beautiful as well. So I'll be trying to see if I can visit for the Portuguese Open in 2023. And then finally, we have the ARGAM, the Austrian Adventure Golf Masters, which will be at Adventure Golf Gompelskirchen. We don't know the dates for that yet. So again, we will update that with more info when we have it. Simon, it's a stacked calendar for 2023. What do you make of it? What catches your interest? We mentioned you'll definitely be going to at least one city golf.
Yeah, where do you even begin with that? And you've only picked the highlights. That's only just scratching the top surface there. I love it. Two things catch my interest out of that. I'll start with Putt 1K, because that's a new concept. Yeah. A lot of you will be hearing about that for the first time. To see a potential four-figure prize sum in the UK outside of that one event in Hastings a year for the Crazies is a novelty. And I think it attracts a lot of interest. It's a bit like Pop Stroke in so much as it's early days to see how that will be received, but that's fascinating.
Absolutely and agree,
To be honest, the one that excites me the most is Portugal. I don't know if any of the Portuguese guys listen to the podcast, but they are just the best guys. And anybody that's been lucky to meet them at an event knows that. I think Felipe is certainly the most social one that sort of spams social media and finds us all. But they are just, to a man, they're the best team.
Yeah.
And they to play across the continent. So, but nobody, not many of us have actually been over and done the favour back.
Yeah.
So if anybody make a plan and look towards November, if not this year, then definitely next year, count me in. I'd love to.
Well, I'm really strongly thinking about it. I'm just seeing if things can work out. But 100% agree with you. Each year, their team selects one place to visit, so we should return the favour. The people, like you say, absolutely fantastic people, fantastic course. It looks like it's an amazing weather. It's in an amazing location in the south of Portugal, somewhere that I'd love to visit. So it just looks amazing.
Yeah, I mean, what's not to like about hot outdoor mini golf in the winter, or at least the winter?
Yeah, absolutely. In other mini golf news, so the GB Wagam team selection has been announced. Congratulations to anyone who did make the team. We'll be 100% behind you and support you. Those people did make the team. The captain was James Rutherford. Seve Kukialka, Steve Lovell, Martin Greenhead, Mark Wood, Paul Tutt, David Jeremy and Ed Pope. So congratulations, as we said, to everyone who made the team. We're right behind you. What people are noticing, though, and we have to point it out and talk about it, only two teams put forward, so only eight players out of a possible 12, and no women either. So when I see that, it's just obviously incredibly disappointing. You've got so many people in GB that really want to go, really want to play a Wagam, get that experience. Women as well, we have some fantastic, or there's some fantastic women playing the sport in the UK. But they've left one team slot empty. It's incredibly, I think... Oh, it just doesn't make sense. The only thing I can think of is that perhaps they were concerned that a third team would be weaker or something like that and let the side down. But I don't really think that's what the Wagam's about. No one cares if you have a third team that's weaker. So especially when there's so many people that wanted to go to the Wagon, it's just an incredibly odd, mad decision. I don't know, Simon, help me out. I don't know. I can't make sense of it.
Yeah. So looking at the Wagon team, I mean, the top. First of all, I want to cover the eight that have went. Mm-hmm. They all deserve to be there. It's a lot of, you know, it's tempting to look at it and say it's a lot of the same old, but they are trusted hands. They support the game and they'll do a fantastic job of representing GB at the top table. The only first timer is David Jeremy. Mm-hmm. He is a lovely, lovely guy. And I just want to call out, having seen his game and the amount of aces he makes, that even though he, you know, he wouldn't expect to be in the top 10, top 20 maybe at Wagon, but I almost guarantee you'll put in one round at least that is an incredibly low score. So before I say anything critical, I want to wish the eight of them all the best, and they have my full support. And I honestly, on the course, I love them all.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely agree.
But this is about off the course. And off the course, what are we doing in the UK? And what are the BMGA doing to ensure that we have our maximum participation and take advantage of the opportunity to send 12? Now, I've heard whispers, perhaps, you know, that maybe there wasn't the interest in filling the places from 9 to 12. And I don't buy that.
I mean, I could feed it right now, right? Me and you were two of them.
Well, yeah. Just from people I know that have an interest, I know that that team could be filled with decent people.
Yeah.
Whether those people are up to the standard that the organisers want, that's a debate for them to answer, and I'm sure they don't want to. If you have any questions on that, either do it as open qualification at the event, and then they will be filtered down to the third team just by standard, or invite them as a development team. Invite four people and say, we want to develop a female, we want to develop you because you had a good season. Invite these people in.
And no one will mind. No one internationally is going to look at that and mind at all.
And I play in the GB, you know, in the events in GB, and I know that they wouldn't be at the bottom. They wouldn't finish last. And to be honest, nobody cares if they
do. Who cares? Yeah.
It's just baffling.
It is.
The only justifiable answer is they didn't have four people to send. And the only thing I would say back to that is, if the EC in the UK were more in touch with what their members want and what their members talk about, they would know who to approach and who to speak to and why people didn't feel comfortable putting themselves forward. For what it's worth, we've got 12 good enough players easily in the UK. And for the second consecutive year, we've failed to send 12. So either we're not in touch with the members or we have a desire to only send 8. I would be fascinated, but, you know, I don't want to say it's above my pay grade, but it's not something I'm involved in the organisation of, and I don't understand. But from the outside looking in, I'm baffled. And that's the second year.
Same. It's difficult to know what to say and put it into words. It's just heartbreaking, disappointing, absolutely gutting.
It's not a personal thing. When I'm speaking to people who are talking about playing events in Sweden and maybe going out to Popstroke in America, and I'm seeing this desire to travel, and I'm going to events of the highest participation they've ever had, which is testament to BMJ's success. And this is the disconnect I don't get. We used to have events in the UK that had 18 or 20 players, and we used to send 12 to Wagon.
Sure.
And now we have events in the UK that sell out at 54, and there's people on waiting lists, and we can't sell 12 to Wagon. And yet, everybody says every season the standard's higher than ever before.
Yeah.
So if you've got twice the membership, and you've got higher standard, higher scores, better midfield, Category 2 winning scores that would have won Category 1 in the past, and yet, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, you were good enough to send 12, then somebody, honestly, is having a laugh. Somebody is not thinking this through. Somebody is still disconnected from the membership. And if they're sat there thinking, we didn't have the people offer to come, then ask yourself why, when you had less members, you did, and now you didn't. And if it's not that,
yeah,
there's even bigger questions and bigger answers I'd like to know. I don't expect to get them. You know, let's move on from my, you know, that's...
Absolutely. The final thing I would say about this, I've got this insight from playing in Czech Republic. Czech Republic sending a team of 12, at least two women. And I can tell you there was such an incredible fight to be in that team of 12. It was highly competitive, highly selected. People were fighting, you know, with every last breath that they had to make the team of 12. Now, and then compare it to what's going on in the UK. It's mad. Anyway.
Maybe it's time to make it almost an event in itself, like the race to Wagam. You know, make it into an event, as in make people want to fight for those 12 places. As it is, you just wait for a mysterious email, answer it and say you would go, and maybe you get an email to invite you back. And no justification for who, why, what. Yeah, I don't know. I'd like to see some transparency on it. But yeah, that's the second year. We talked about this in the first ever episode of the podcast.
Yeah, that's right. We come full circle. We've done nothing. We've achieved nothing.
This is how we started in 2023. So, yes. And anyway, now we've got that off our chest. All the best to the eight that go.
Absolutely, 100%. We're fully behind you.
That eight will do us as proud as the others that did not go would have.
So, joining us today, helping us recap the month of January, not just one special guest, but we have special guests. In fact, a whole team, the Swedish putting team. Please welcome to the 54 Problems podcast, Kevin, the putting pro Sundström, Alexander, the kid Medina, Garner, the professor Bengtsson, and Hans, the captain Olofsson. Welcome all to the 54 Problems podcast. Hello, everyone.
Thank you, Andrew. Good to be here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. You're sort of the talk of the mini golf world at the moment, so it's great to have you with us. Most of you joining us for the first time. Alex, you've been here before. You've been on the podcast before a little bit. I've got a piece of 54 Problems bonus trivia. So in the 26 or so episodes we recorded, that's about 20 hours of airtime that we've recorded, Alex has been the only person to ever swear on the 54 Problems podcast. Simon's nodding. So Alex swore when we interviewed him about the Pop Stroke Tour Championship in 2022. And we thought that he played so well that he deserved that we left it into the episode. So there you go, a little bit of bonus trivia.
You all know I'm still a kid, so I can't really behave, but I'm still learning.
Okay, so let's get into the real meat of the episode. This is the section where we have a look back over all of the interesting tournaments that happened in January and have a little look ahead to February. This is Tournament Talk.
Tournament Talk. Tournament Talk.
So between the 13th of January and the 21st of January, the AMA, the American Mini Golf Alliance, that we really like on this podcast, they held their first event in 2023. And actually, this event could be played by anyone around the world. Simon, do you want to take us through it?
Yes. So our friends in the AMA, so that's organised by Tom Loftus and Pat Sheridan, they decided to do something different for the first tournament of the US season that they organise. And they held it on Putt 18, which, to those of those who know it, it will be no surprise to see that being given a go, but it is the first time we've seen it on this level. And it meant that anybody, even at home, anywhere on the globe, could play an AMA event. Yeah, I just thought a good idea to get people involved. And we've seen a winner from GB with Dave Gom. So Dave Gom has made Putt 18 his niche. And he carved out a little, you know, a little section of success for himself. And he came through and won with 266 over four rounds, winning by 10 shots from Justin Seymour in second. One of our friends on the podcast, Sevi Kukielka, took the other place in the podium. So despite the fact he's flown out to America twice in the last few months, he actually got his first success in the US while at home, which is quite ironic. But well done to everybody that took part in it, supported the AMA, and found a new way to spread mini golf.
On the January 22nd, began the Monza Night Marathon. So 10 rounds of mini golf starting at 1 a.m. It's played in pairs. Congratulations to the winners. I try my best to pronounce their names. Congratulations to the winners, Gerald Dini and Diotti. Their average score to win was 26.5. And actually, one of them scored 26.4 average and the other one scored 26.6. So I thought it was really nice that their average scores were both amazing and both really close together. So they looked like they worked really, really well as a team. In fact, looking at all of the other pairs, none of them had an average score that was that close together. And we'll share the scores in our show notes.
So earlier, the 54 Problems team had a phone interview, a quick phone interview, with a couple of new players at Monza, their coach and the tournament organiser as well. So we'll play that for you now.
We are joined by Simone Colombo and Alberto Martinelli. These are two players who played the Monza Night Marathon for the very first time. And also joining us is Alberto Piovano, who is the president and the coach of the club, and also Fabio Agostoni, who is the team principal. So Simone, starting with you, this is the first time you have played the Monza Night Marathon. It's a very interesting event, starting at 1 a.m. for 10 rounds. What made you want to start playing the marathon?
It was an awesome occasion for us to play the Night Marathon because you have the opportunity to play with some really talented guy and player. For example, I played with Lars, the Swedish coach. And so it's a great opportunity for this reason and for because we have the opportunity to play in our home course. And we try to play in the best way possible.
We take the decision to participate for the participation of Alberto and Simone because they are a young player for mini golf. We made an important preparation for Alberto and Simone with Alberto Pirovano, our coach, and my coach in 1999. And based on technical preparation, psychological preparation, and physical preparation.
We started with a long program,
okay,
more or less 6 weeks. Or more, we started from the normal results, mm-hmm, of Simone and Alberto. We tried to study lane by lane the statistics, mm-hmm, and the skills of each player.
I have one final question for Alberto. So when you were playing the marathon then, when it got to 4 a.m., 5 a.m. in the morning, how did you find it? Was it difficult? Were you tired? And overall, did you enjoy the experience? And would you want to do it again? Because it's quite a unique mini golf tournament.
It's a particular emotion in the night. When you play in the night, the tournament is the course of the tournament is under a roof. You don't recognize what time is it? And Alberto have the luck to relax himself in the Saturday and sleep some hour in Saturday afternoon. And this is a part of the preparation that Alberto Pirovano and I try to help Simone with the emotional fitness, because Simone is a guy more emotional, more Alberto is a very a nice man when play mini golf. I joke with Alberto. Alberto is a special person, a special player.
Okay.
The spirit of Monza is Monza is a team. Monza is an important team, an historical team of mini golf in Italy.
Okay, so finally then for Alberto Martinelli, would you play again next year? Did you enjoy it? Would you play again next year?
Of course, of course.
So, Alberto, you're the president and the principal coach then of Monza. What do you say to perhaps the younger players who haven't had much experience if you see them becoming tired? So you're watching their game, you can see them becoming tired. Does that happen? And do you have conversations with the players to wake them up? What does that look like?
Made a really good job before the tournament. We try to study all the moments that we can have in the tournament, different time, at different condition of gaming, of emotional, I think we organize all the things in the best way. Try to give the best for them on the training. Mm-hmm. On the course, they played with the right spirit and with the good motivations, and we arrived close to the results that we fought before the tournament. So at the end, the result was really really good, in my opinion.
So very very last question to you then, Fabio. The Monza Night Marathon, I think you'd agree, is it has the attention of all of Europe and possibly the world of mini golf as well. It's a very exciting event. It's a very interesting event. There's a lot of interest about it in Europe. Are you happy with how the event has gone? And what would you say to anyone around the world looking at the event, interested in playing perhaps in the future?
But only few words to explain the emotion that a player of mini golf, a new player of mini golf, and the whole player, not only for the age old, but older for our his pedigree of player. Play the tournament, the Night Marathon is an important emotion that you have to try in your life of mini golf player, because it's a different tournament.
Mm-hmm.
The lanes, the surface is really good for the mini golf players, because it's not raw, it's not raw, but it's really shining, and you can play like on the ice. It's beautiful because you play slowly and you play in the right way, and the balls are perfect during all the course.
Only one thing, the record of Vedano is 20.
Okay.
20 strokes.
Yep.
20 strokes. And it is a mini golf, not a miniature.
And who is the player that plays the 20?
Who has 20 strokes?
20.
Alberto Priavano make 20.
That's the end of the interview. I think really, really interesting interview, especially listening to the amount of preparation they put in for the new players. Seem to have unique, bespoke training programs for the players, putting a real lot of care and attention into training these younger players. So that was awesome to listen to.
Swedish putting team, what do you make of marathons? What's the longest you've played mini golf for? Have you played in a marathon before?
Well, I have. I've played in a 24-hour marathon in Eternit in Sweden a few times. And that's a lot of fun, but it's not. That's like a tag team. So you're two guys and you. But I think that's the same that they do.
The same in Monza. Yeah.
So that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I've done it twice, I think. And one of the times we played felt golf, 24 rounds. In 24 hours. And actually, I played my best score ever on felt golf. It was 22.
After was how many hours was that? How tired were you when you got your best score?
I think it was like 5 in the morning and I had slept like 2 hours during the night. So it was a bit hard to concentrate, but I was very relaxed. And I think that's why I played 22. That's crazy.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, pretty much the same for me. Yeah, I mean, I shot like one of my few 18 rounds at about 5 in the morning as well.
That's amazing. I didn't know that. Okay, and finally in January then, the reason that you're all here joining us, between January the 23rd and the 24th was the first ever event in the Pop Stroke Tour series. In Orlando, there were two different types of events here, two different types of competition. There was the classical stroke play, which I believe cost $300 to enter, with the top prize $5,000 going to Gunnar, and we'll talk about that in a second. Randy Reeves in second place and Lee Messenger in third place. And then there was also a high roller event. So $5,000 to enter with a $20,000 main prize, with first, second and third going completely to the Swedish putting team. So Hans in first place, Matthias in second place and Kevin in third place. We'll talk a little bit about that in a bit. First of all, I believe you all went to the Pop Stroke Tour Championship in 2022. After that then, what was the idea behind forming this extremely successful Swedish putting team?
It's basically just some kind of get some kind of a name on what we're doing as a group to be able to attract sponsors. I mean, even if potential sponsors probably would like to sponsor certain players, it's also big, great to show that, I mean, we're part of something bigger, and also hopefully to, I mean, to be able to participate and develop and the game in a bigger sense, because I mean, like Guillaume says over a pop stroke, I mean, just us going there is part of the developing thing, because like for example, the high roller this year in January wouldn't have even have been there if it wasn't plus five. So it's about I mean, having fun together and also trying to do something good for us, for the sport, and to contribute in a bigger sense, and also to be competitive together, but still play as friends, but still be competitive, and also challenge each other to become better putters.
What did you think of the course when you arrived then? You had some experience already at a Pop Stroke course. Did this course feel any different? What were the kind of challenges? And I understand it was quite busy with the public as well. How did that factor into it?
I think the course was... it had a lot of ace holes.
Okay.
But it also had some very tricky holes that you were very happy if you got a par, two strokes.
Right.
And that was like hole 7, 11, 17 and 18. mm-hmm. especially 17 and 18, as you maybe saw on the scores.
Yeah.
It was a lot of bogeys and double bogeys and triple bogeys and stuff. So you were very happy if you could get par on them. But you also had to get some aces at around 6 or 7 holes per round. And I didn't get that many aces. So I had some troubles getting birdies. But yeah, like Gunnar did in the stroke play championship, he had a lot of aces.
Mm.
And I think that was the key to win. Also like Hans Olofsson in the high roller. But yeah, it had a lot of ace holes if you compare to the red course in Sarasota, but also some very tricky holes.
Yeah, and as you can see in the scorecards, that all the top players, they really took advantage of the like the easier holes, if you can say it like this. So if you didn't ace any of the easier holes, then you were in a big trouble.
So one thing that you really have to master with these pop stroke courses that we found is they vary a lot how much they roll out in the like early morning to daytime, evening. So the temperature is crucial. I mean, if you've practiced in 20 degree weather and then you play in 27 degree weather, it's not going to be the same at all. Or if you practice in the morning and then your round is in the afternoon, it's not going to be remotely similar. So you have to, each time you go out there, you have to have a feel for how much speed you have to put on ball. And at some times of the day, it's like putting on a ballroom floor, like glass, almost ice.
Mm.
You feel like you just start the ball and it keeps rolling. And those are the times of day where you see people taking not just threes and fours, but fives and sixes on holes, because you just hit it from one sand trap to another. It just never stops. That was similar as well as we saw in Sarasota to Orlando, that it just varies a lot.
Yeah, I even have on my notes on my phone, I have like, all the holes, and I write the morning lines and the evening lines, the midday lines, and so you have to take note what time it is when you are practicing.
Yeah, for sure. Some of the ace lines from the morning would just go straight into the bunker in the afternoon. So you have to know when to switch, especially on the hole 17 was like, okay, is this, do I switch lines or do I go for the evening line or the morning line? And then, I mean, that was one of the hardest strategic decisions that you had to make for that tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that must have been one of the advantages of having made a team, is that you could share that information, I guess. Was that something you'd done when you were at different bits of the course? Did you sort of give the nod to tell each other that it was starting to change?
Not really. I mean, you're not allowed to actually talk about the course or the lines or anything out loud. Those are the rules of the course there. So you're not supposed to talk to each other at all. But I mean, you can watch each other. And we've since we had 3 full days of practice, we pretty much learned it. But you could also, take a glance at the other guy's lines and see, okay, did he do that? Or what line did he take? But really not something that we would say to each other, because, we want to stay within the rules.
Mm-hmm. So what I'm hearing, and it's the takeaway I'm taking from that, is clearly you're all very technically skilled players, but it sounds like one thing that made the difference was your preparation and having that knowledge, that experience, and knowing to take notes of the different times and how the lines would change. Because in pop stroke, you have your adventure golf players as well, but you're competing with players that aren't necessarily from an adventure golf, from a mini golf background. So do you think that experience and that knowledge you had to take the game seriously and to take notes like that, do you think that ultimately made the difference?
For me, this is the biggest difference.
Mm-hmm.
that if you compare us to like a golfer.
Sure.
And also, I would say that we are, it's easier for us to snap up, to pick up the right lines from the beginning. Like we see all the opportunities on the hole. Like you can go from the backdoor shot. Could you actually aim like far left from the big on in the beginning and then like hit the rough and something like that? Maybe for a golfer, they just see the greens, and the shortest way to the hole.
Yeah, we always try and find a backdoor shot because those are usually easier to control. And the golfer will always try and find the front door shot first.
Sure. And backdoor shelf and doesn't really backdoor doesn't really exist in big golf, does it?
No. And it's usually nearly 90% of the time, I'd say the backdoor shots are better. Or just like a few different times when okay, there might not be an angle for the backdoor shot, but if you can find it, it's easier to maintain and to have like the proper speed and find the hole. So we use that, and also like preparation, I think we're more precise in how we do things, exactly where we put the ball and where we aim compared to the big golfers.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. We've spoken about the preparation, looking then at starting the stroke play tournament. So this is playing individually, $300 to enter or thereabouts when you look at tax, $5,000 main prize. One of the interesting things I thought, and Alex has already kind of mentioned it already, where there were some difficult holes at 17 and at 18. When you were playing that stroke play, did you feel the pressure towards the end? Was that on your mind that these difficult holes are coming towards the end?
On hole 18, actually, from the beginning, we played a backdoor shot to get a safe par. Right. And then Gunnar, I think it was, he found a front door shot on 18. It was the same line, but you played it softer. So there you could still get a safe par, but also some aces. And we'll continue with the aces on 18. In the high roller when we talk about that. But yeah,
I think that's Gunnar, that's why they call you the professor, maybe. Yeah. Maybe. And in fact, Kevin, I think I remember seeing on the Swedish putting team Instagram page, you did that front door shot on 18 twice in a row, right?
Yeah, terrible. I didn't make three, right?
And I actually think that was Kevin's shot from the start. We refined it together, I think. He tried it first, and okay, it ended up in the bunker, and we just thought, okay, just hit it a little bit harder and it'll keep on line. But you do have a point there, Andrew, that like with the 17th and 18th holes looming so large, no round, you couldn't feel safe, even if you're 4 or 5 under, 6 under. On some courses, you're like, okay, I can just play safely. And you can't play safe on this specific course, the red course in Orlando, because, I mean, safe is a three. So you have to go for a pretty tight line, pretty hard, difficult shots just to get the two. And you're going to end up with difficult deuce putts, usually like a meter or sometimes a meter and a half, even if you make a good first shot. So it's just like you could never get complacent. You could just but I think that was pretty good because you just had to keep playing and just take one shot at a time, like you always should anyway.
Okay, so talking about that, Gunnar, you eventually won the stroke play. You won the golden putter and the $5,000 prize. It was interesting what you just said. Do you think that had anything to do with it? So it sounds like you were kind of forced to play aggressively throughout. Do you think that actually played into your style? Do you think that helped you?
Possibly, but, you know, I wasn't thinking of playing aggressively or not aggressively. I just tried to play the best shot I could and tried to put the ball close to the hole every time. Because most of the holes, you can't really you can't go for the ace, as it were. You just have to make the very best stroke you can, and then sometimes it drops in and sometimes it doesn't. But if you make those good approach shots every time, you're not going to have that many long deuce putts, and you're not going to have that many threes. So I mean, just try and keep playing your best mini golf throughout the rounds, and I just try to avoid looking at the scoreboard and looking at where I was in the tournament as much as possible. So I avoided looking at the scoreboard until I got like to hole 14 or 15 or so. And I realized I have to be doing pretty well. And I think I made both 14 and 15 to go to 16 under. And I looked up at the scoreboard and it says, okay, the top guys are like 11 or 10 under. So I double checked with the guys who were in already and asked Hans and Kevin, what's my lead? Is it like 5? Kevin said it's 6. so I figured, okay, I'm gonna play this really safe now, 17 and 18. Got two easy threes just to take the win, because they're, if you try and make it too fancy, you might end up with a scary situation where you end up in the bunker and you don't want to do that. So I just took the easy threes and was very happy with that.
But the audience was not so impressed.
No.
There was some guy watched, were like, is he missing it 1 footer? And is he winning? No, that can't be true. So people that didn't really know what's happening was a bit surprised seeing that.
Yeah, I heard some comments from the peanut gallery. So that was fun. It's one thing to play well, but it's really hard to win one of these things when there are like 50, 60 good putters. I mean, you can finish in the top, but to actually go ahead and win, it's not always up to you. You might have someone going just crazy bananas like Alex and make a super round, and you just can't keep up. So to finally win one of these was really made me really happy.
Alex, maybe that could be your new nickname, Alexander Crazy Bananas Molina.
Yeah, good, but this time it was Gunnar who was Crazy Bananas.
Congratulations, Gunnar. Moving on to the high roller then, $5,000 to enter. I don't think anyone in the community, with the possible exception of the MSOP and Rickard Lochner and the people who competed there, but I don't think anyone in the community has played anything like this before, with such big stakes. $5,000 to enter, $20,000 for the winner, and only prizes to first, second, and third place. Can you describe a little bit what that felt like? Did it increase the pressure, or was that not in your mind? Was it in your mind at all when you were going around how much money this was worth? Kevin, can you talk us through that? Was that on your mind at all?
Yeah, for me, it was like the first 2.5 rounds, I didn't think anything about the money.
Wow.
Then like on hole 12, I think, then I remembered like, wait, we are playing for a lot of money here. and I was playing quite bad actually the whole week. So I felt like I have to do something now. So then I started to scream a lot. Like usually when I make aces in Sweden, I don't scream so much. I'm quite quiet.
Right.
But I was playing with Alex, the Crazy Bananas, Alex, and he was pumping me up as well. So yeah, it was a nice end of the round there. So I was screaming on all the aces, and it was awesome to climb up the leaderboard.
Okay, so the Swedish putting team then had a clean sweep on the high roller, winning first, second, and third place. So I think that talks to the success of everything that we've spoken about how the team was formed, how you prepared together. Winning the ultimate prize, $20,000. Hans, How did you feel during that round? Alex is clapping you. So's Kevin. How did it feel during that round? Did the pressure get to you at all? How did it feel to win? Can you talk us through it a little bit? Because you're the first high roller winner for Pop Stroke. What was it like? Can you walk us through it?
Well, I guess it was pretty intense. I mean, I had a good feeling going in there, and I mean, we played a couple of rounds. I got a little bit lucky at the end of the second round, and even broke the course record with a crazy finish on 15-18. And then it was just about, I mean, trying to reload and play the last round. And I mean, I knew, it's obvious if you play 18 or 19, you always have it. It's always tough to play the next round after. And I knew it was going to be tough. And I tried to play my game, and I hit my shots pretty well, I thought, but I was just making small mistakes. I mean, narrow margins. I got some unlucky breaks, and suddenly, I mean, it was getting closer and closer. And then Kevin, especially Matthias, played very well at the end, and I didn't really get any balls to roll with me. And then I took my 4-17. I was like, okay, I still get one shot. It's no problem. I'll make it. Then I looked at the board, and I was like, this must be something wrong here. I mean, I'm even with Matthias.
Yeah.
I mean, he did ace 18, but I thought it was two up. And then he aced 18. So I thought, okay, if I make a deuce, I will still make it. And I was like, okay, I have to make a deuce just to tie him and then get a sudden death. And that was, that's been intense. And my first shot on 18 was actually, it was not very close, but I mean, I had a line that was like, okay, this lines up pretty much as my last round when I aced it. Oh, I was like, ball was like, I mean, it's quite a long roll. So it's like halfway. I got thinking like, oh, maybe I can make this one. This will be amazing. But then it passed the hole, and I had a fairly basic deuce pad, and I knew I had to make it. So I didn't have to, I mean, there was no playing for safety, even though, I mean, if I missed that one, I could take a 4 or 5, and then I would probably lose all the money. But I mean, I made that one, and then me and Matthias had to go again. So I figured out, I mean, let's let Matthias play the first, and then I can go on his score, and then I will play first again. So it's like, I mean, kind of momentum, which I managed to get, because I first made his two, I made my two, and I made another deuce. And then I felt like, okay, now he has to play two times just to keep alive. And then, he missed only the first time. So it worked out pretty well in the end. But I mean, that whole 18 was something else, so I tell you. But it worked out well.
You said you had a good ending to the second round. You actually got four aces in a row, right, to get the course record at the end, including 17 and 18, which we spoke about. Can you talk a little bit about how you feel now about Pop Stroke as a tournament idea? So you've played now two tournaments at Pop Stroke. How do you feel about it? Do you feel it's the future of adventure golf? Do you like what they're trying to do? Do you think they need to change at all? Do you think they're heading in the right direction? What do you make about the Pop Stroke concept as a tournament format?
I think, I can speak for all of us when we say we do love it. We do love the concept.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still trying to work out the kinks a bit.
Yeah.
Where they're trying to find the right balance between keeping everyone happy, the good players, the not competitive players, the Pop Stroke owners, and the operators of the tour.
Yeah.
And that's quite a tricky balance to keep, because there has to be something in it for all of them. Guillaume Villand has spoken to a lot of us and spoken to us and to a lot of other players. He's the guy who runs the tour series, the tour championship. And he's trying to find the right balance for the rest of the season. We love the concept. We want to support it. And we want to try to be at as many of these as possible in the future.
So looking ahead to February then, on February the 20th is the next Pop Stroke Tour Series event at Fort Myers. Are you planning to attend?
As Gunnar said, we want to play as many as possible and support this, because we think this will be even bigger in the future.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Finally, is there anything else that you want to say that we haven't covered? So anything on your mind that you were hoping that we would talk about that you haven't had an opportunity to talk about naturally? Is there anything else interesting that you feel you'd like to discuss or to bring up?
Well, I guess it's just to say thank you to Guillaume Bellon for actually doing this and pulling this together, because we really love it. We love it, and we're going to be back. And there's, I could bet some money that there's going to be at least one or two Swedes in Fort Myers as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think that's an awesome way to leave it. I'm very happy for you. You look like you went there. You were incredibly successful, but you had fun as well watching the videos. You helped each other as a team. It was awesome to follow along and watch. And yeah, I think Simon and I share the same sentiment. We absolutely wish that Guillaume and Popstroke would be massively successful in the future. And we look forward to following that journey and also following the journey of the Swedish putting team alongside that. Okay, to wrap it up, thank you all for coming. Have you enjoyed your time on the 54 Problems podcast?
Of course. Sure.
Few thumbs up, few sure. People nodding. That's great. With that said, then, the only thing left to say is it's goodbye from Simon.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from Gunnar, the professor.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from Kevin, the putting pro.
Goodbye. See you later.
Goodbye from Alex, Crazy Bananas, Kid Manila.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from Hans, the captain.
Goodbye, guys. See you on tour.
And it's goodbye from me. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.